This episode of Storyworthy is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. You can register your domain name now for only $2.95.
Yeah, that's right. GoDaddy is offering OneNew or Transfer.com for the very low price of $2.95.
Yeah, whether you're starting a new business, you just want to put your idea online, or you just want people to look at you because you need attention, you can make a new.com or you can transfer a .com for only $2.95.
And when you're over there at GoDaddy, enter the code STORY295 in the promo code at checkout, and then you are in fact supporting this podcast.
Hey, it's Emily Krasner, and you're going down the shore with Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we are at the New Jersey Music Hall of Fame in Asbury Park, New Jersey, because I like Bruce Springsteen.
Have you ever been to Asbury Park, Hannes?
Never.
I mean, besides now?
Well, besides now, of course, in our mobile van, but we're really hermetically sealed, so we still have California air inside.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, I still haven't been in New Jersey. It's outside the van, and I'm afraid to go outside.
Well, we spent
the Thugs and the Sopranos, you know.
Yeah. Right. Well, I don't know. I don't. I have different memories of Jersey because I grew up we did our summer vacations there. So for me, New Jersey was always about going down to the shore, as my mother would say.
Yeah, that's still, I mean, the fact that you lived in Pittsburgh and you went to New Jersey still geographically in my head seems wrong. I know it's not wrong. I just don't picture Pittsburgh being anywhere near
New
Jersey.
Well, I have a fine story to share about the Jersey Shore, Hannes.
What an odd coincidence that this piece of paper in front of you would hold a story concerning New Jersey, which, by the way, is our topic for today.
Exactly, because tonight we have writer-comedian Emily Krauser with us, and she's a Jersey girl. I mean,
yes,
she does many things, and she's very talented, but at the end of the day, she's a Jersey
Right.
girl.
You didn't tell me that, but when she came in and kicked me in the nuts before she said hello, I realized she probably was from New Jersey.
You know who else is a Jersey girl is Jennifer Raid, my friend Jennifer Raid, although I think she's kind of right outside of Philly is where she's from, but she...
Isn't Jersey outside of Philly? Isn't that the...
Yeah, but it's in Pennsylvania, there's an attitude that goes along with Jersey that I love.
I think it's a combination of East Coast arrogance combined with not being in New York you feel like, you know, New York is always saying we're better than you while you feel underneath them, but then you feel superior to the rest of the country. So it's very confusing. Does that make any sense?
The Garden State. I mean, itself, okay. I don't even know if there are a lot of gardens there.
I'm sure that somewhere in the middle of New Jersey is one of the most beautiful places in the world, but I've never seen a picture of it.
It's really shaped like a nut, you know, when you think about it. The shape of New Jersey is it's just a little curve, isn't it?
You're saying like a man's nut?
Like a comma.
Oh, okay.
Let me tell you something, Hannes. Growing up in Pittsburgh, like you were saying, growing up in the Midwest, the beach was elusive. I mean, like a dream. Only rich people lived at the beach. The beach was for television and movies. The beach wasn't real. Yet every summer, my parents made that dream happen for our family, and they packed all six kids into the Ford Country Squire with no car seats, no seatbelts, and no air conditioning, and drove 8 hours east to Ocean City, New Jersey. Now, I think now it only takes like 6 hours. I don't know why it took eight. Oh, wait. I do know why. Because we had to stop because there were six kids in the car.
Yeah. And if
of
you,
course.
You know,
what
because,
am I
thinking? No, because you had one boy and five girls. If
you had five
boys, they would have been peeing in cups and pouring out the window, and you wouldn't have had to stop every
All right. Now, months. Due to birth order, I always had to sit in the way back of the country squire facing backwards along with my brother and sister. We always left at like 3 or 4 in the morning. And I guess the logic there was that the kids would be sleeping in the car most of the way. But, of course, that never happened because we were too pumped up because we're going to the beach.
Right.
Now, since there was no air conditioning, the windows had to be down at all times. And it was just like a constant wind tunnel. And over the sound of the hot air blowing through the car, you could hear us singing at the top of our lungs. We sang Peter, Paul, and Mary, If I Had a Hammer, The Monkees, Last Train to Clarksville, and the entire Neil Diamond and Bobby Sherman libraries. Now, my sisters would decorate a shoebox and fill it with titles of songs written on little scraps of paper. And then we would sing whichever song was drawn out of the shoebox.
I would have driven that car right into a tree.
As we cruise the Pennsylvania Turnpike, we'd honk our horn through the tunnels, named after the mountains for anybody out there keeping score, the Allegheny, the Tuscarora, the Kittanee, and the Blue. And then we'd stop at a rest stop and we'd tailgate with high C and assorted donuts that came in boxes of 12, cinnamon, plain, and powdered sugar. Of course, all six kids fought over the powdered sugar donuts. And my dad, my dad would drink his coffee from the red-checked thermos that my mom always brought for him.
By the way, do you think that coffee was straight? Do you think there was some bourbon in there? I'm thinking there's bourbon.
You didn't touch my dad's thermos. Maybe that's why.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking that that thermos was probably the most expensive thing in the car. It was revered. My dad's thermos was the iPhone of 1971. Now, one year on the way to Ocean City, we had to go to my cousin Steven's wedding in New Jersey on the way. And we had to take Grandma Blackburn with us. Now, I'm thinking...
I saw this movie. Chevy Chase in this movie?
The only good thing that can come of this is that I know there's going to be wedding cake, you know, at the wedding. Thank God there's going to be cake. Okay, so now there are 9 of us in the country squire. My grandmother is smoking and praying during the entire trip. Holy card after holy card. Cigarette after cigarette. Rosary after rosary. Novena after novena. All of us six kids wanted to sit in the back of the station wagon on that trip. And then, to top it off, my grandmother took a powdered sugar donut at the Kittanee rest stop. Who the fuck does she think she is? Finally, we get to my cousin Steven's wedding. And not only did we have to sit through church, which they didn't tell me about,
but
the wedding cake was some god-awful spice cake with rum raisin filling. It was a fucking disaster.
God, this is horrifying.
Now, luckily, when the reception was over, we left my grandmother there to ride back with Aunt Ruth, and we drove on smoke-free to Ocean City. Now, we rented a beach house every year we went to Ocean City. By the way, not even close to the beach.
Yeah.
Ah, Ocean City, with its boardwalk, its beach tags, and its beach tagger patrol, who sweep the beach every half hour, checking your bathing suit, and thus your private parts, for beach tags that you have to buy from, you guessed it, the beach taggers. And if this vacation...
I think the Sopranos, again, are rearing their ugly head.
If this vacation isn't already sounding like a dream, get this. Ocean City is a dry town. There is no alcohol in the town. You must cross a bridge into Margate or Atlantic City to buy alcohol. Now, at the time, I thought nothing of this. I was a kid, and this is before I was 14 and started drinking Warmstrow's beers from Kimmy Eddie's basement. But now I look back and I think, why would anyone want to vacation in a dry town? But we kids, we loved it. We were each given $1 to spend on vacation. One year, I chose a speckled cowrie shell that had been made into a whistle. And another year, I got one of those sliding number puzzles in that tiny black and white frame. One year, we stopped by Gettysburg on the way to the beach, and we spent the afternoon looking for cannonballs on the battlefields. I always expected to find them, just like littering the fields. And my mom never discouraged us either. In fact, she encouraged her kids. Oh, look over there, honey. Is that a Confederate soldier's boot? That year, I bought a small silver cannon statue for $1.10. My brother, who's a huge Civil War geek, floated me the 10 cents because he had a paper route. Now, at the beach... Sunblock, of course, did not exist. So the skincare treatment was as follows. Go to the beach, burn, 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 apply a white t-shirt, go back to the rental house, lie across the bed while mom applies Noxzema to our blisters, and then the next day wear the white t-shirt all day long. And at the end of the day, my dad would carry each of us individually from the beach to the car, where he would whisk our shins and feet of sand with a whisk broom before putting us on the steamy vinyl seats of the sweltering wagon. I swear to God, I can still feel that whisk broom scraping my sunburned legs. And at night, we'd walk up to the boardwalk in matching dresses that my mother made for us on her sewing machine. She had one of these matching dresses, too. They were called shifts. My sisters and I wore bright floral printed shifts, and my poor brother Scotty, the only boy, he got matching shorts.
Oh.
Picture the Kennedys, only in Ocean City, New Jersey, walking down the boardwalk and by the music pier. Now, my mother, she paraded us up and down the boardwalk and into all the fudge shops for dessert, because one tiny sample of fudge at a time, and all six kids would have their sweets. So after repeating the beach, the boardwalk, and the sunburn routine over and over and over, then we'd head home after a week with our $1 gift and a large seashell collection. often would also take starfish from the ocean and would put them in sand buckets with a little bit of water on the way home and would use them as window clings all the way back to Pittsburgh. We'd take them out of the bucket of warm water and place them on the hot car windows and peel them on again and off again and on again and off again until all the suckers fell off their dying smelly bodies all the way back to Gibsonia, Pennsylvania.
Oh, so PETA, if they ever hear about this trip, will be like, how dare you torture the poor sunfly. By the way, I had to bring up on Google Maps the actual route from Pittsburgh to Ocean City.
How many miles?
362 miles. It says here 5 hours, 37 minutes. I think you were driving pretty slowly because you had 3,000 people in your car.
Yeah, no, and like I said, we had to stop.
Constant drag with all the windows up, and you're probably going 35 miles an hour. Your dad is sucking down, like, just bourbon, and it's like there's no coffee. There was, like, one coffee ground on the top to give it a little taste, and he's like,
It is so funny how there were no seat belts, and we used to just, like lay in the wheel wells. You know, we
remember the old Volkswagen Bug that we had when I was so small I could fit in the well behind the back seat under the back window.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
Like, I was...
I can't ever picture you that small.
I was that small. I was also cute and adorable.
Well, you're still pretty adorable.
I'm closer to cute than I am adorable, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know what I'm thinking.
Yeah, no, it's like... who is it? I think Patton Oswalt has a great joke about... I think it was him that, you know who was an adorable 5-year-old? Adolf Hitler. Everybody's an adorable 5-year-old. It's like you can't tell what the hell's going to happen. Can I just say, looking at this map, you were so much closer to Lake Erie, but I guess...
We used to go there, too.
You did go to Lake Erie. Yeah. Okay, because driving all the way... Looking at this map,
here's the thing with Lake Erie. Here's what's nice about Lake Erie. Not sticky, because it's a fresh lake, isn't it?
Yeah, it's freshwater
lake. So
it has
all the great properties of a beach, but without the stickiness.
I was going to say, growing up in Milwaukee, the town's so nice they named it once. It's like we had a beach. It was we were on Lake Michigan, which, if you don't know, is a gigantic lake, which you could mistake for an ocean.
Yeah, because you don't see the other side.
It's like you were like, oh, nobody went to the beach. It's like we had no money, and we went to the beach all the time because we lived in a city built on a lake. And
on the lake. Isn't that what they call it?
No, that is Cleveland.
That's Cleveland.
Cleveland, where the river that runs through the city caught fire. Then that's when they started to call it the mistake on the lake.
Awesome. That's awesome. All right, you guys, Emily Krauser's on her way here. But first, I do want to remind you guys, if you want to support Storyworthy, there's a couple of different ways you can do it. First off, here's the best way, Hannes.
Yes?
You tell your friends.
Yes.
First, you have to explain podcasting. Okay, I understand. But then you lead them to Stitcher or to Swell or
to iTunes.
Yeah, it's not
that hard. You're doing it. How hard can it be?
That's what I'm
saying. Tell your friends to just go to storywithpodcast.com and they can click on one button there and they can listen to it.
Exactly.
They can go to iTunes.
And
they can go to Sideshow Network.
And here's the good news is, like, let's say after dinner and you're cleaning up for your family and say you're washing dishes, well, then perhaps you'd like to turn on Storyworthy.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
your kids are sitting there and they're like, what's that, Daddy? And then I go, you fucking bastards. And then you realize you shouldn't have played. No, I won't say that.
So please, you guys, share the show with your friends. We do appreciate that. And, you know, Storyworthy, we are celebrating our 4th anniversary, July 10th.
That's wood,
and
I believe.
So that's coming up the 4th. Is that right?
Yes, I believe it's wood. It may be plywood. It may not. It's not oak. It's not a solid wood, but it's something you can build something out of.
Also, folks, follow us on Twitter. We always appreciate that. All right, you guys, wherever you are, stay tuned because Emily Krauser is on her way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have writer Christy Stratton.
Hi, yes, and I'll be talking about babysitting and pornography, you know, those things.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
Hey everyone, I'm Matt Knutson, actor, comedian, attentive listener, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
And we're back. We've actually taken the mobile van and driven a few miles to Ocean City, New Jersey, and we are right outside, and the motto on the city sign, it says, America's Greatest Family Resort.
That's, you know what, that's exactly what it is. It's a family resort.
Yeah, so do people, natives actually live there?
People do live there, but it's very small.
Being
it's
invaded.
Charming. It's quiet is what it
is. About 11,000, it says here. Yeah.
Oh, really? That's bigger than I thought.
Well, you went there, in 1840, so it was probably smaller at that point.
And they have Wawa markets, which are like 7-Elevens, but they're called Wawas.
Well, that's just stupid.
And I used to work at Core Brothers Ice Cream on the boardwalk, and I was so poor, I ate ice cream all the time.
Oh, I'm sure as a teenager you hated that idea.
As I was 17 years old working on the boardwalk, yeah. And
you would have eaten ice cream anyhow.
I know, right?
Yeah, by the way, in Wisconsin, they're not called 7-Elevens. They are now, but they used to be White Hen Pantries.
White Hen Pantries. Yes. Interesting.
Yes. And it was like not a pantry, and there was no hen anywhere. It sounds like, this is sort of a quaint little country store, and you walk in, and it was horrifying.
Now, my buddy in Colorado lives in a town where they have come and goes, and I can't even say the sign because it's so absurd, the come and go. Now, come, they spell K-U-M.
Oh, come.
The come and go. Okay, look it up on the computer right now, the come and go.
That's like silent movie porn word.
It is. It's the come and go. And so
I'm going to come, K-U-M, and it's like a Keystone Cop.
Yeah, I'm like, don't say that to your sons. Like, can you run up to the come and go for some milk? I mean, they're not going to come back with milk. So anyway,
if we're lucky.
You guys,
really,
she's
I think
here.
We've gotten off the beaten track.
She's
now we're
here.
In Colorado.
Right
here it is.
Now.
Wow, you know what? I'm looking at it. Woo!
All right, lightning. You guys. Emily Krauser's here right now. She's a writer and a storyteller and a Jersey girl. Now, she's written for the Huffington Post and XO Jane, and she also runs a monthly storytelling show here in Los Angeles called Stupid Smart Kids, which I think is
very funny. That sounds like us.
Yeah. She's got a blog also called HonestlyEmily.com, and you can find her on Twitter at GoSugarHighGo. Folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for Emily Krauser.
You know you've hit a low point when you're the biggest drama queen in the room, and Snooki is also in it. In my defense, I was pretty miserable during the night in question down the Jersey Shore. Actually, I'd been miserable that entire summer. It was 2010, I was 26, still living at home in North Jersey, going nowhere at my 9-to-5, and working two more jobs to save money so I could move to Los Angeles. I was also in the middle of a very specific depression that hits every 2 years for 2 weeks only in the summer. I never tell anybody about it because it sounds weird even to me. And I certainly hadn't told my boyfriend Drew about it either. We weren't doing very well. Drew and I had been dating on and off for about 4 years. During the first two, he didn't want to be in a relationship, but I stuck around and hoped he'd just change his mind. He didn't until I started dating someone new and could no longer be his backup plan. When that relationship ended, Drew and I started dating again, this time for real. We became official in June 2010, and he told me he loved me on the 4th of July. When I heard him say those three words, all I could think about were the 2 years where he did everything in his power to push me away. I did believe that I loved him now, but the idea of that also terrified me, and I couldn't say the words back. A few days later, I did the one thing I never expected to do and hope I never do again. I cheated on him. And being full of Jewish guilt as I am, I told him exactly what I did, and there was a lot of apologizing and crying and begging and then very little talking for a few days. Because these weren't enough self-inflicted disasters, I'd also planned a weekend trip to Seaside Heights for late July. Seaside was not my first choice by any means, but it was the only shore town in the 130 miles of shoreline in New Jersey that would rent properties to a group of 20-somethings during their busiest season. Growing up, Seaside's most appealing qualities were that it had the nickname Sleaside, and it's where all after-prom parties took place. So now, 25, I had rented a small bungalow there that barely fit myself, my two best friends, Kayla and Matt, Matt's girlfriend Lee, and Drew, who still decided he would join us down the shore. It was just 2 weeks after I had cheated, but apparently Drew still loved me even though he hated me, and I could not believe that I had convinced him to drive down the parkway. Maybe this weekend by the beach could fix our problems, even if three of our other friends would be there with us. We weren't the only ones who had a big weekend of drama planned in Seaside. Fresh off the plane from Italy, the entire cast of Jersey Shore was there to begin filming the third season of their show. To really shove that fact into our skulls, a very localized commercial kept popping up during the Jersey Shore marathon that MTV was so graciously playing that entire weekend. It announced that the reality stars would be partying at a club called Karma on Saturday night. I'm not normally a club person, but when in Seaside, one fist pumps. That being said, I didn't want myself or my friends going anywhere near Karma. It would be packed, overpriced, and more sleazy than usual. So instead, we went to a different club a couple doors down called Bamboo. Still in the midst of my again, admittedly weird depression, but now a few shots deep, I decided to be the biggest brat humanly possible. I whined about the $10 cover, the friends who were supposed to join us but didn't, not being able to dance to whatever beats they claimed were music, and how badly my feet hurt because obviously I should have picked flats over the super cute wedges I was wearing because they matched my only appropriate in Vegas, or Seaside, neon leopard print dress. Suddenly, all I could think about were my aching feet, so I decided to leave my friends in the middle of Bamboo to walk back to our rented bungalow by myself so I could change my shoes. There was no sense to this, but it seemed like a very good idea at the time. Jerry asked if I wanted him to walk with me, and I yelled, "No, I'm going by myself. Don't leave Bamboo. But if you do leave, just tell me where you go, okay?" So Drew made one more attempt to walk me back to the bungalow, but I shoot him off and stumble down the street. When I opened the door, a pair of bedazzled flats were smack in the middle of our booze-covered kitchen floor, mocking me for casting them aside in the first place. I slipped into them and called my friends to make sure they were still at Bamboo. Lee was the only one who answered. She was not at Bamboo. She yelled into the phone, "We're at Karma. I know what you're going to say, but it's cool. Really? I mean, there's a $20 cover, but Snooki's here, and you can totally tell that she's not wearing any underwear." I hung up on her, pouted my way through the absurdly long line for Karma, and handed the bouncer $20. Inside, MTV's cameras and lighting equipment were scattered all around the club, as was most of the Jersey Shore cast. Lee was jumping up and down in the middle of the dance floor trying to get my attention. In my absence, my club-averse friends had become the epitome of every Shore stereotype. Lee and Kayla were fist-pumping, Drew and Matt were doing that what one could describe as dancing if forced to give it a name. In a drunk burst of energy, Matt managed to run up to the situation and chest bump him, yelled some secret word into his ear that caused him to laugh, and then all of a sudden a PA came running up to us and frantically chased Matt around to get his signature because he was obviously going to be on camera. Matt cried, "I'm going to be on TV," after signing his life away, but spoiler alert, he was not. 20 minutes of sweaty bodies, pounding beats, and the situation's abs were more than enough for me. So I took my pouting to the outside patio, where Ronnie and Sammy were fighting, and JWoww and Snooki were talking to a group of beefed-up, greasy dudes flirting with them for screen time. Drew joined me outside and started to ask what was wrong, but I couldn't pay any attention to them because Snooki's wobbly path from the patio to the sidewalk to a waiting car was far more riveting, especially because it included her falling ass-first into a bush. I decided if Snooki thought it was time to leave, then it was obviously time for my friends to leave too, which was not sound logic, but everyone was too drunk and tired to argue with me. I bounded out of the club with Drew and my friends trailing behind. Every time Drew was about to catch up with me, I started walking faster. When I got to the street we were staying on, I realized it would be a far more dramatic move to make a right and head for the ocean instead of a left towards the bungalow, so I obviously made the right. I plopped down at the end of the boardwalk and dangled my feet off the planks. I was trying to decide if jumping onto the sand and running through the waves would be the tipping point where I truly hit overdramatic when Drew sat down next to me. I didn't look at him. He asked, "Will you please tell me what's going on?" And I didn't answer. We sat there for a few minutes listening to the waves break, and I heard him take a deep breath. He said, "I can't do this anymore. You won't tell me what's wrong. You've ignored me all night. You cheated on me, and I still came down here. Do you even care about me?" That I answered. I said, "Of course I do." He said, "You have a funny way of showing it," which, frankly, I couldn't argue with in that moment. He waited for me to respond, but I really had nothing else to say, even though I had everything more to say. I wanted to tell him I was miserable and everything else besides him in my life wasn't going well. I cheated because I was scared, not because I didn't love him, and I was acting like a brat because nothing was shaking these sad feelings in my head, not even a weekend down the shore, which is supposed to be every Jersey girl's happy place. Drew got up and walked back to the bungalow, but I stayed behind, breathing in the salt air a little longer. He was wide awake when I got back, just lying in bed and staring at the ceiling. I crawled into bed next to him because there was no other surface in this tiny bungalow to sleep on, and we laid like that for most of the night, side by side, blanketed in an uncomfortable silence. One sleepless night, a morning of cleaning a beer-drenched kitchen, and 3 hours of silent, tension-filled Garden State Parkway traffic later, Drew and I resumed the same position on my bed, back in North Jersey. Side by side, staring at the ceiling, not knowing who should talk first. It was easier to see in sober daylight that despite the crap I made this guy put up with, he wasn't going anywhere. He made me happy, he put up with my shit, but never let me get away with anything, and he genuinely wanted to fix our problems. I'd done this horrible thing to him, and he let me drag him to Seaside anyway. If that wasn't unconditional love, I have no idea what is. So I decided to tell him about the depression since I was smack in the middle of it. And I was surprised to see his face turn from confused to relieved. He said, if you had just told me all of this, I would have understood. I might have been able to help. And telling me you've been in a bad place wouldn't make me love you less. It probably would have made the summer easier. And that was all it took to lift my cloud of depression that year. I wasn't forgiven for my bad behavior by any means, but I was supported. And I knew that I might have a shot at fixing this thing that I had clearly broken. Then Drew said the most important thing of all. I never thought you'd be a bigger drama queen than Snooki, but at least you were wearing underwear. Apparently, Snooki saved my relationship that year, and it's true, at least I was wearing underwear.
So are you still with this guy?
I am not, but he is a very good friend.
So how much longer did you date after that?
We ended up being, we say we were on and off for like 6 years.
Wow, in total. That's a long time.
We met in college. It was my senior year and his junior year. And he was very much like, I'm in college and I don't, like, why are you still coming around? And I was like, because I want to.
What do you mean? You were in college too, right?
We met at the end of my senior year and he was still up in college for about 2 more years.
Oh, I see.
In college, in our college town.
I see.
For like
I see.
2 years. So I would like, and I still had friends there, so I'd go out and visit, and I'd be like, of course this is going to work. And it didn't.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Well, it ended up. And
it's
then
very sweet.
Yeah, it's a very weird, the first 2 years, and we've joked, it only took 8 years to do it, but the first 2 years was very much like just not working at all. And then I had gone up to visit, and he was like, you need to find somebody like in Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, fuck you, I will. And then 2 months later, I did end up dating somebody for about a year, like pretty seriously for a year. And somewhere in there, Drew was like, oh crap, she will go do exactly what I just said.
And then we ended up
just trying to date again after that.
So what school did you go to?
I went to Ithaca.
Ithaca. Oh, yeah. In Cornell. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Ithaca
Cornell
is the town.
Cornell and Ithaca are both in Ithaca. Yeah.
That's right.
We're like a cult out here in LA. There are hundreds of us.
Yes, I believe
the
that.
The Ithites. Ithacites.
I call it the Ithacults.
Ithacults.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I love it, though. It's great because it's miles away in this built-in community.
Oh, that's very nice.
Well, yeah, but there's
good.
A lot of that in L.A. because, like, there's the built-in...
Boston people.
Boston people. Emerson. There's the Emerson people.
Chicago
there's the
people.
Wisconsin, the Chicago people.
The
Midwest
people.
The Wisconsin people.
I think
it's
any
like
town.
If I see somebody with a Green Bay cap on, generally... Well, it's weird about Green Bay because they have, like, such a fan base. I'll say to people, hey... Go Packers. And they're like, what? And it's like, oh, I just bought the hat. It's like they don't know where Wisconsin is. They don't know where the Packers play. They like him because they like Aaron Rodgers, but they have like no idea where it is or something.
I had a Favre t-shirt for years.
Yeah.
When he was at Green Bay. But then as soon as he came to the Jets, I had to burn the thing.
Wow.
Because you hate the Jets?
No, because I'm a huge Jets fan. And I was like, he just destroyed our – well, everything destroys our seasons, but –
Yeah, I really think you'd be a hard sell to say that Brett Favre is the reason for the Jets being bad for 40 years.
No, but he was a great scapegoat that year.
Yeah, he was.
So,
look, the guy took a picture of his penis from the worst possible angle. I never get these guys. I don't
Emily,
know why
you're
people...
never going to win because Hannes is in love with Brett Favre.
Oh, okay.
And you'll never win no matter what you say. So we can just, you know.
It's the only criticism just... Brett Favre I've ever had. When
you don't
took
like
that
the angle
picture,
of his penis.
No. You don't take a – if you're going to bother, which I don't, to take
you
a
take
picture
it from
of
the
your
bottom,
penis. You
from
take it from
under,
the bottom to create an illusion of
up,
height
right.
and length. You don't take it from your angle. Like, I'm so bored and I think I'm
so
important
lazy.
That I won't even get up off the couch to take a dick pic. I'll just take it from here on the couch. I'll move the remote out of the
but
way.
I think a lot of women know that is the angle. I don't think anybody's going to deny Greg
Farber.
You at the top
no,
of the list.
A lot of men know that
down.
There's such a thing as padded bras. That doesn't mean they don't like seeing women in padded bras.
I know, but women know about shrinkage. Women know about angles.
That's true.
Emily, let
Damn
me
it.
Ask you this.
They know everything.
What color was your neon leopard print dress?
Oh, it was every color. It was pink and purple and yellow, and I still have it, and I wear it when we go to Vegas.
And I think you should never throw that away, and I think at some point you got to put in one of those box things like at the Hard Rock Cafe where you can have that on display.
I love that dress
because that
so
is,
much.
Is that right?
But what's funny is, and I've joked about this before, I'm a Jersey girl through and through. My accent's died a little bit. Certain words you'll hear it.
I hear
but,
it.
But... It's only East Coasters. Like, no, we know where you're from.
Yeah.
But
can you say tasty cake?
Tasty cake?
Tasty Cakes. I always, when I think of New Jersey, I think of Tasty Cakes.
Oh, I say, it's usually when I say coffee or water, like there's zero. Oh, this yeah, is actually that's me it. Probably
there's
being
something
light
about the word coffee.
It.
I know a couple of guys from New York, and it's like they it's are coffee. Like, hello, yeah. How are you? How are you? Would you like some coffee? They yeah, can't say coffee.
It's hard. Like, it's harsh. I can hear it in my head, too, every time I say it, and I'm like, I can't control this.
By the way, I want to point out you have a Dunkin' Donuts to-go cup
I
with
do.
You.
I'm
obsessed. Is this
obsessed.
From the East Coast?
Oh, yeah.
Because we don't have any Dunkin'
Jersey.
Donuts out here.
This came with me my entire drive from New Jersey with it. And it's the coffee. And it's also just knowing that it's Dunkin' Donuts. And I'm so bad. Like 2 months into living in California, at midnight, 4 of my friends took a drive to Vegas because we're like, there's a Dunkin' Donuts. This is a road trip.
Wow.
I will go anywhere.
You'll go
that
far.
That is the act of a person
like
under
Boston,
23.
But Boston love also it. Is very a big.
Well, the whole East
Dunkin'
Coast is
Donut
big with the
town.
Well, there are Dunkin' Donuts in.
Dunkin'
in the Midwest, but we don't.
Yeah,
we,
no, like
we don't
every,
care about it the way.
Oh no! Like
East Coast.
I drove cross country this past Thanksgiving. Actually, I went home, and every town, every time we stopped, we would have to find where the Dunkin' Donuts was. And my friend was like, "Are you really like Beaumont, Texas?"
So Emily, you drove
this?
From LA to New Jersey this past Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
and
oh, wow.
It was that you didn't want to pay the airfare. Is that the?
I hate flying. I'll
okay.
do it. But I hate it, but I love road trips.
I see.
I love driving.
I think that's a young person's game.
That's what
it.
I was saying. Like the idea of like, you know what? Let's go to Vegas because they have Dunkin' Donuts. That's if you're anywhere over 28, there's no fucking way you're like, I'm not driving to Vegas to get Dunkin'.
I was 26 then, but I am 29 now, and I would still do it. I promise.
Now
okay.
listen, when's the last time that you were down the shore, as it were?
Down the was it the last time? No, last time I was home was Thanksgiving, so it was probably last June or July.
It's very busy in the summer,
or
isn't
something?
It?
Yeah, yes, my mom and I, because I've been out here 3 years, out in LA. So my mom and I every year now will take a day trip to Ocean City, actually, because
oh, that's
we spent
awesome.
Every summer there when I was a kid.
Right.
And
okay.
Now, what
love
were you
it.
Saying? There were places that she was mentioning. That
yeah,
Christine
everything.
Was mentioning that you know.
Oh, every fudge shop, because you stop and you get your one tiny piece, and that's then you it. Come back like 2 hours later and hope they don't recognize you.
Right. Of course.
Always. It's like Halloween.
Like a pair of glasses or
yeah,
a hat.
Yeah, me and my sister would change our hats.
Yeah, the
exactly.
Coors Brothers. I've had the shells that are. Mine were always shaped like frogs, though.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Interesting. You mean like the fan shell?
Yes.
We would find clam shells. We would go clamming off 52nd Street.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we
oh.
were. Yeah, we did the
clamming
whole thing.
Clamming off 52nd Street.
Hey, now, let
that
me
just
ask
sounds
you
like a Springsteen
song. Do people
song
in New Jersey think that the Jersey Shore people are cool?
No.
So
are they embarrassed
were,
by them?
Yeah,
being
you were
such
saying
stereotypes.
That night at the club at Karma.
Yeah.
Were, I love the names of the club, by the way. Bamboo
yeah.
and Karma.
Yeah.
But you were saying how Snooki and her, they were entertaining those guys in the back who
yeah.
wanted camera time. Now they sound like they were impressed.
They're entertaining. Well, a lot of people, and I would see this because it wasn't the only place we saw them filming, but people will go up to them because these other people who aren't on the Jersey Shore want screen time. They want to see their face on camera. So, and that became a problem. I remember hearing that for Jersey Shore, that people would just want screen time and they just run up to them and they couldn't film, you know, their quote unquote
mm-hmm,
reality.
Right.
Yeah,
but,
their scripted reality. Segment, yeah,
yeah. But, my argument, my big thing with them was always that only two of them are from New Jersey. Sammy's from New Jersey and The Situation. And they're from Monmouth County, so they're from, like, the shore, near the shore. But the rest of them, like, Snooki's from New York. Who's the one with that?
Yeah.
DJ Pauly D was from Rhode Island. Like,
it's not even the, it's
what?
Not the shore.
But there's this mentality, there's this very, you know...
well, it's been cast. This is the thing. It's yeah. a television show. You try to explain this to the civilians back home. It's like, it's a TV show. It was cast just like a scripted show. It's just like the Goldbergs. There's a script. There's a cast. It's like...
There's
they
writers.
Don't yeah, there's writers.
Well,
you don't call them writers.
I've heard that that Jersey Shore had a little more freedom, that it wasn't like, you know, some of the other shows. They had a little more freedom. But our big argument was always that, like, now when people hear Jersey Shore, that is what they associate it with. And it's like, I spent my every summer as a kid,
yeah.
you know, any free weekend or day, you go down the parkway, go to the shore. And I'm like, now this is, people just think this is it. And
yeah,
Seaside
exactly.
is very much like that with the clubs. And but that, you know that that's what
it's
you
also
get when
an
you're
age
going
group,
there.
But it's also, you
yeah.
know, it's age appropriate in what you're doing. It doesn't mean that that's what everybody in New Jersey is doing.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Chris Christie, and he's got all of his supporters, and that's a whole other part of New Jersey.
Right. Mostly all the Dunkin' Donuts that he personally keeps in business.
but also, I think about
jokes.
The Sopranos all the time. I always
yeah,
think of kind of the mob angle.
Well, it's
kind of
like I think it's like the Kardashians. Like, the Kardashians are not everybody in L.A., but I think a lot of people in this country think that L.A. and Hollywood and show business, or Beverly Hills in particular, is like, that's what it is. It's just people like that everywhere. And there's a lot of those people, but they're not the majority, and they're not everybody. Most of us are really, well, pretty boring compared to what
Yeah, pretty much down to earth and regular, like everybody else. But we don't say down the shore. We say go to the beach.
Go to the beach. It's always, when you're at the beach, you're at the beach. But when you're driving,
going
you're going down the shore.
And even
now,
if
what if you were coming
north,
from Atlanta and going
still,
north, you would
no,
still be going
still
down the shore.
Yeah, okay. You're down the shore no matter what.
You're always down the shore, and you know when people are like, let's go to the beach. And I'm like, well, who are you? Where?
See, in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, you would go, let's go to the lake. You wouldn't even say the beach. It's like the lake.
It's very specific. It's just the Jersey Shore. If I'm going to Florida, I'm saying I'm going to the beach.
That's right. It's just different.
It's just
Emily, let me ask you something. Do you still have the two-week depression every summer?
I haven't had it. It hasn't happened the last 2 years, so
good.
Fingers crossed.
Oh, I hope
it's
so.
It's the weirdest thing, and it's so it's never.
Well, have you
like,
gotten any medication for it? I'm a big medication guy.
No, myself. It's one of those things where like, cause it started when I was like 14 or 15, and I didn't really know what was going
right,
on.
Yeah, right.
And I didn't understand it, and I thought it was just this one thing that happened to happen that summer. And nothing, like I just couldn't get out of it. What got me out of it that summer, weirdly, was I was on a camp. I did this camp 3 week thing in Michigan. And we went to see Dr. Doolittle, and I got back on the bus and was fine. And I was like, that's what it took? At one of Eddie Murphy's worst movies? And now I'm like,
well, now we know.
Let's go get ice cream.
So
like,
you
what?
Just need to have Trading Places and Beverly Hills
Cop. It was the weirdest
thing. You would have been ecstatic
had
you seen a good Eddie Murphy movie.
Right? It's just, it's
the
very
Nutty Professor,
weird.
And you know, you're good to go.
This is how I explain it. It's not like on July 1st every year. I know it. That would be better. I'd be like, okay, I know what this is. What this is, and
right? Can you?
It's
just, right,
so it's
and
like
all your
rough.
Friends would be like, whatever you do,
happening.
Do not invite her to the 4th of July party.
It's
not going to go.
It's
well.
Bizarre, but it's always in the summer.
You anticipate it, and
I can
it,
feel
then you...
like if it's happening, and I'm like, oh god.
Well,
you
know,
just can't get
from woman to woman. I'll just say, Hannes, you can close your ears. every month when I like get a little bit like weepy or sad or whatever, I can think to myself, wait a minute, I'm PMSing. That's what's happening. And it can help me get through it a little bit because then I think it's okay to just be sad for a minute or, you know, be unhappy because it's going to pass.
Oh, yeah. This is a little more bizarre because I would never say that, like, I deal with depression because there are people who have it all the time and need to take medications and it's very, very different. This is just this, it's happened enough that I now recognize the pattern and see what it is. But I wasn't telling anybody. I mean, Drew was the first person I ever told what was going on. And I was like, oh, if I just tell people.
Listen, I am super glad you guys are still friends, and I'm glad were able to talk with him because it sounds like he is a true companion or friend for you.
Yeah, he's one of I'm one of the closest people in my life. I very much trust him, and he's always he truly when I say he doesn't put up with my crap, like he does not put up
so
with my crap.
So this one, Drew, is going out to you. In New Jersey.
It's 2 days when I've gotten in my car that Bruce Springsteen has been on. And I don't know if you understand how happy that makes me.
Sure. Like, I take off my hat when I hear
it. It's going to be a good day.
Hey, listen, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Of course.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Faith. So I was forced to go to Hebrew school from the age of third grade. And I was forced to go because I was supposed to have a bat mitzvah, and I wanted the bat mitzvah for the presents, obviously, not because I gave a crap about these Hebrew words that I didn't know in the Torah. I what was that going to do for me when I was 8? But my mom made me promise that I wasn't doing it for the presents, so I promised, and then I threw tantrums every week. And the very first one I ever had to go to, we sat in synagogue on Sunday morning, and they told us the story of Adam and Eve. And as an 8-year-old, I remember thinking, this is a load of crap. And that was weird for an 8-year-old. Like, what was I supposed to do with that? I had to do this till I was 13. But when I got older, I think I was in 6th or 7th grade, and because I hated Hebrew school so much, I couldn't study Hebrew. I was so bad at it that I was a straight A student in like real school. So they made me take tutoring and the classes were at the same time and both teachers didn't realize this. So I would tell one that I was going to tutoring and then I would tell the other one that I was going to tutoring and I would sneak to the old mansion and just hide up there and like tell myself ghost stories because I thought that was better.
See, and religious school and ghost stories—it's basically
fantastic.
The same thing.
That's a great story.
I hated it.
Are
so
you a
much.
Are you practicing anything now?
I say, like, I am Jewish. You don't just stop being Jewish.
Right.
It's like in our
right.
blood.
That's got right. very little to do with the religion in that.
But
sense.
I don't really practice. I had a friend basically have like a falling out with me because I was like, I don't want to go to synagogue today for the high holy days.
Right.
I was like, I changed my mind, and we basically didn't talk for 2 years.
Wow.
And I was
really?
Yeah. Well, I was in the middle of all my like cancer.
Yeah, so I wanted to touch on briefly, you are a cancer survivor. Congratulations. Hooray.
Thank you.
I'm so happy for you.
Thanks.
Yeah, it really touches so many people and at all ages. And there you are in your 20s.
Super fun. It was really the best year.
How often do you have to get tested now?
I actually just had my 1 year scan.
Good.
So I've been in remission for 1 year. It's I have to go to the doctor every 2 months and I have scans every 6.
Okay.
So now they're doing it every 3. So
that will start elongating though as you get
out. Now it's I only have to go see my oncologist every 3 months. And I think at a certain point the scans become only.
Yeah,
like
now I just had a CAT scan last Friday, and I hadn't had one in 4 years. So,
oh wow!
You start getting some time in
that
between.
That makes me feel better.
Bragging,
already.
Bragging,
and
I'm
17 years out. So,
congratulations!
And you will be a survivor too. You are.
Yeah.
So it's very exciting, and I'm happy to see you around town doing benefits for cancer and different things. That's very giving.
Yeah, I love. I mean, but I love because I love storytelling, and I love just being able to do something. So I started with Team in Training, which is part of Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, mm-hmm. last year. And it was sort of in a selfish way because I did chemo for 6 months. I did radiation for another 20 rounds. And I was very active before this. I was going hiking. I was, I wasn't a runner, but I would like pretend. I was always doing something. And then I was knocked on my butt for 6 months and basically felt lazy, even though I knew I was being treated for a disease, but I wanted to get back into some semblance of shape. So I signed up with them to hike in Yosemite and did all of that training. And then I decided this year I wanted a real challenge. So I signed up for a half marathon because, again, I'm not a runner. So this is like...
That's huge. 13 miles is
I'm
huge,
still...
Right?
Oh, I'm still mostly
nobody
walking
nobody from New Jersey
it, but...
runs that far unless they're being chased by the state troopers.
I don't know if I've ever seen a state trooper. Oh, maybe. I have to think about that.
That's because you're a fast runner.
It's usually it's more that like we run to get out of the
traffic. Well, I really commend that you're doing all that. I think that's just wonderful.
Thank you.
You're an inspiration.
It went very well. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's very inspiring, and you'll do it every year, you think?
Hopefully. I may not do a Team in Training thing every year, but I want this fundraiser to happen, at least raise money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society every year.
I want that to happen for you too.
So
and
excellent.
I'm glad you're in Los Angeles because Los Angeles can always use more good-hearted people.
Aww,
I can tell that's from you.
Thank you. There's so many compliments today. I'm so glad that I'm here.
But it's true. LA, we're always looking for good people.
What seems
out here,
like, it's funny. LA is like the bar is so low that it's like, you're a decent human being. Oh my God, you're not a complete self-centered scumbag. Thank you. Oh my God, it's like you don't have to be that great. That's what I'm saying.
I wonder though if you just sort of are surrounded by your people in a sense, because honestly most of the people, especially the storytelling thing, is fairly new for me, but the people I've met in the storytelling community out here have been some of the nicest people.
Yeah, much kinder than
comedians. I've met and like
much kinder.
Yeah, I've just started going to open mics literally like 3 weeks ago. And I'm like, this is a different world.
It's different.
It is a different world. And it's always been a different world.
We
got to
wrap this up.
Yes,
but I want to ask Emily real quick, why in New Jersey can't you pump your own gas?
It's illegal.
What's happening?
Oh, it's amazing. The gas is cheaper. It's illegal to pump it. Somebody does it for you. I really think this is the greatest thing New Jersey could give to the rest of the country if they wanted. I don't have to get out of my car if it snows.
In other words, it employs people because somebody has to
pump your
gas.
It ensures that all lazy Jersey girls don't have to get out of their cars or learn to do this one thing. And if it snows, you just get to sit there.
Oh,
and gas is cheaper.
You said, you said Oregon's the only other state, and I recently drove through Oregon for the very first time, and a guy came out to pump the gas, and I didn't know what the fuck was going on. I didn't understand. He didn't say, looking at the plate from California, like, hey,
I don't know if they realize
by the way, I have to pump the gas for you. That's the law. You're not allowed. He didn't say that. I'm like, I'll do it. Like, what am I, crippled? What am I, you know, it's like, and he didn't say anything, probably because he's from Oregon and he's real nice. It's like, it was so confusing. He was watching me pump gas.
Yeah, I only knew because I had to pump gas the very first time when I went away to college, and I was in my car with my friend from Oregon, and we just sat there. And we're like, what? Why isn't this is a really slow gas
Nobody's
station?
Nobody's moving.
God, they're so rude here.
Service. No one helping us. And I was like, Walter, you can do that. Like, get out of the car. Help
and there's
me.
A guy.
Like, I don't know what to do either. And I'm like, oh god,
there's
we're
a guy,
not
you
relieving.
Go up to the guy in like the bulletproof booth who is it doesn't come out of there until the end
Someone
of the shift.
Someone came and knocked
and
on
you're
my
like,
window.
Oh, that's
you
what
drive
it was.
Across that little wire and that's off the bell.
Ding
right?
ding
ding ding, and that means come out, pump on gas.
Oh, I don't know. I'm just
no. I remember the ding ding
here.
Oh, I see.
I'm here.
They don't even have to do that
Not
in Jersey.
My
I see.
Yeah.
All right, you guys, we got to wrap it up. Thank you very much for coming today,
Thank
Emily.
Thank you for having me.
We really appreciate it. And on behalf of everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Anthony Bench and Sean Merrick, and of course, you know, John Thomas Griffith, Hannes, that's
John
the guy
Thomas Griffith.
That wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
I've heard of this. I'm going to research it on Wikipedia later.
And on behalf of our storyteller tonight, Emily Krauser, and of course, you, Hannes Finney,
Me.
My dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
And you can
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.